Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, an intelligence briefing on what I consider to be the war for the free world. There are few places more directly in the front lines of that war than the state of Israel these days. I am always grateful and delighted to have join us a man who I've come to know and admire tremendously as a thoughtful proponent of an Israeli point of view on matters of great strategy, but also a man who is deeply knowledgeable about this country and is able to help all of us understand the connections between the two. He is Ambassador Yoram Ettinger. He formerly served as the Minister for Congressional Affairs in Israel's embassy in Washington, D.C. He also was a Consul General of Israel for the southwestern United States, and over the space of many years of service in this country, he has, as I say, become extremely fond of this country and very knowledgeable about its strategic interests as well as those of his own nation. He has been the author of Jerusalem Cloakroom and the Contemporary Mideast Backgrounder. He is the executive director today of Second Thought, a U.S.-Israel initiative, and always a welcome guest at Secure Freedom Radio. He's generously giving us a full hour of his time to explore in detail what is going on at the moment and what to expect in the Middle East and beyond. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much.
Could you start off this, detailed conversation with kind of a 30,000-foot assessment of the importance of Israel to the United States, well, and vice versa?
Well, geographically and geostrategically, ideologically, state of mind-wise, Israel has been, from day one, a beachhead, an outpost of American values, as well as American economic and national security, homeland security interests. The late General Alexander Haig, who was Supreme Commander of NATO, Secretary of State, whenever he was asked, what does Israel symbolize, or what does it mean to you? His response was that Israel was the largest American aircraft carrier, which never required a single American boot on board, which could not be sunk, deployed in the most critical area for American commercial and national security interests. And if there wouldn't be a Jewish state in the eastern flank of the Mediterranean, then the U.S. would have to dispatch, to deploy a few more real aircraft carriers to the Mediterranean with tens of thousands of American soldiers. And that would have cost the American taxpayers some $15 billion every single year, all of which is spared by one Israel in the Middle East.
And it is, of course, the case that the Middle East at the moment is a vastly more turbulent area than it was when General Haig made that comment. As a result, I think it's fair to say that the importance to this country of having such an unsinkable aircraft carrier, if you will, such a power projection vehicle, such a reliable and close ally, has grown inexorably in importance. And yet what we're seeing at the moment seems to be, on the part of the Obama administration at least, an indifference to that fundamental reality. Talk, if you would, a little bit about the state of the U.S.-Israeli relationship government to government at this moment, Ambassador Ettinger.
Well, there's no doubt that there's no love lost between the two leaders, U.S. and Israel. But a testimony to the democratic nature of both U.S. and Israel is that, unlike most countries in the world, the relationship between the U.S. and Israel are not dictated from above, but they rise from bottom up. It's people to people. It's military establishment to military establishment. It's high-tech establishment to high-tech establishment. And as a result, while there's no good chemistry between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu, the strategic cooperation between the two countries is at an all-time high in response to the intensified threats on one hand, and in my mind, the highly enhanced capabilities by Israel. I'll share with you and the listeners personal experience. I flew to Birmingham, Alabama a few months ago, and next to me was a young man, I assume in the late 20s, and I found out, talking with him, that he spent a year in Iraq and a year in Afghanistan. He was a member of an American elite unit, and according to him, he spent 3 weeks in Israel before Iraq, 3 weeks in Israel before Afghanistan. He was there with his unit, trained by Israel's top experts on suicide bombers, on car bombs, on the improvised explosive devices, the deadly IEDs. And according to the American elite unit person, he attributed much of the credit to the fact that the unit came back to the U.S. without a single fatality to those 3 weeks in Israel. And certainly this is a symptom of what has been going on in the last 20, 40 years between the two countries, which has transformed dramatically the relationship from one-way street when U.S. gave and Israel received with much, much gratitude. Currently, we're talking about very busy two-way street, mutually beneficial, win-win type of relationships between the two countries. This is my second week on Capitol Hill, and walking into congressional offices does reveal the extent of cooperation. One office from Chattanooga, Tennessee, I heard that there is a Northrop Grumman plant in the district. They manufacture the robots which neutralize explosives. And according to the congressman, the minute Israel started buying that unit, it became known throughout the world that Israel, which is in dire need for such robots, chooses that robot, that caused exports to hit through the roof. According to the congressman, the manufacturer benefits weekly from lessons drawn by Israeli use as far as operations, maintenance, repairs of the robot. As a result, the current generation is by far superior to the one purchased by Israel due to the Israeli daily, weekly input of such lessons. And the congressman mentioned to me, Mr. Edinger, you bring me more such items, and this will further expand employment in my district, enhance research and development, and increase exports. It seems to me you can multiply that example by roughly 1,000, because Israel is using roughly 1,000 American military homeland security systems. Each one we use on a daily basis, we share with the manufacturers our lessons, and thereby we expand their employment, we improve their R&D, and we increase their exports. I think this is the essence of the real new, very, very mutually beneficial bilateral American-Israeli ties.
Very well said. As always, Ambassador Yoram Edinger, and I think, you know, one other facet of this, which you sort of alluded to, but to be very specific, in every case, I think it's fair to say, Israel finds ways to make improvements on technologies that we share with them, and those are fed back in as well, enabling the manufacturer to ensure that these are really as high-quality systems. And by the way, this applies not just, of course, to the military. This is something that's taking place across the board, as you've indicated. We're going to come back with more with Ambassador Yoram Edinger, and I want to drill down on something that's going to be coming up shortly on Capitol Hill, which you have been visiting, as you've said, namely the visit of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address a joint session of Congress. The unhappiness of the Obama administration about that, and some of the rather bizarre backstories that you need to be understanding as well, especially if, as we do, you support the Jewish state at this critical time. More with Ambassador Joern Oetker straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Ambassador Joern Oetker, one of our favorite guests and certainly one of the most extraordinary thinkers and analysts of developments in the Middle East and more broadly strategically and how they bear on not only the interests of his nation, Israel, but also those of the United States. He formerly served as the Minister for Congressional Affairs at the Israeli Embassy in Washington with the rank of ambassador. He was also its Consul General to the southwestern United States. You can find more about him and his work at theedingerreport.com. Also check out Second Thought, a U.S.-Israel initiative that he directs. Mr. Ambassador, we have indicated an upcoming event featuring the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, engineered by the Speaker of the House, who has invited him to address a joint session of Congress next month. And this has caused considerable angst in the administration. But first of all, talk a bit about why it is important for Israel's leader to be heard from at this moment in time by the United States Congress.
Well, Israel happens to be a central element in the whole public debate about Iran. Israel constitutes a very important center of human intelligence and other sources of intelligence about Iran. And at this stage, when we have a major debate in the U.S., in Israel, throughout the free world, whether how to handle the Iranian threat diplomatically, militarily, it is very important to hear from what I would term an expert on the ground. Let's remember that if we go back to the early 80s, it was then a young Israeli politician, Benjamin Netanyahu, who came to Washington, met with then Secretary of State George Shultz and other senior members of the Reagan administration, and had quite an impact on their perception of the threat of Islamic or international terrorism.
We're talking with Yoram Edinger. He is a man that has been closely following and indeed deeply involved in for decades now the U.S.-Israeli relationship. And you were describing the influence, the impact that Benjamin Netanyahu has had in his decades of interactions with American leaders, Mr. Ambassador. And I think your point about his early warnings on the threat of jihadism were important at the time and even more necessary now as we confront perhaps the most serious of these jihadist elements, this Islamic Republic of Iran. So what do you expect him to say to the people of the United States and their elected representatives in this joint session of Congress next month?
Well, what I would like him to say is to set the threat in a real fashion in front of the representatives of the American people. Real fashion means that we're talking today about a debate between two schools of thoughts. One school of thought, which suggests that Iran is innocent until proven guilty. The other school of thought is convinced that track record points, highlights Iran as guilty, maybe until proven innocent. And certainly those two schools of thoughts need to be debated seriously. I hope that the Prime Minister will shed light on the track record of Iran and will present the case that Iran constitutes a major threat to the entire Western world, not only to Israel, not only to the U.S., and maybe even primarily to top American allies in the Persian Gulf. I hope that the Prime Minister will talk about the impact of a nuclear Iran on global stability in light of the fact that a conventional Iran constitutes a dramatic, clear, present, lethal threat to everything which we hold dear to our interest. How compounded that threat would be with a nuclear Iran, and how devastating a nuclear Iran would be to America's posture of deterrence. And maybe one example which is very close home, Iran and Venezuela maintain very, very intimate, strategic, I would even say, rogue ties. Already today we have Iranian missiles on Venezuelan soil. What would a nuclear ally of Venezuela mean to the homeland security, national security of the U.S. when you think about the impact of a stronghold of Iran in Venezuela upon the entire continent of Latin America, possibly upon Mexico, and how far is that from metropolitan centers in the U.S. when one talks about ruthless, apocalyptic regime, which proved its willingness in the 1980s to sacrifice 500,000 of its own youth on the altar of clearing minefields during its war with Iraq.
Yeah, it's just staggering to contemplate the magnitude of its, well, its barbarism and its determination to have its way with those Muslims and non-Muslims alike who are not submitting to its dictates. Yoram Edinger is our guest. I'm very pleased to say he was a member of what we called a truth squad that appeared on Capitol Hill earlier this week. You can see the video of it at securefreedom.org. And Mr. Ambassador, in the course of those remarks about Iran and specifically the magnitude of the danger that it represents, you and our colleagues made very clear that it is not just the purpose of the Iranian regime to, as its former president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad used to say, wipe Israel off the map. And I believe the Ayatollah Khamenei says the same thing as well, even today. But also, as they've put it colorfully, to bring about a world without America. As you look at the emerging Iranian nuclear capability, is there any doubt in your mind that this is, in fact, an existential problem for both of our countries and perhaps even for nations in Europe and elsewhere as well?
Well, all we need to do is examine the day-to-day Iranian conduct. Iran celebrates every November 4th, Death to America Day. At the same time, when Secretary of State Kerry negotiates with Iran, holds Iran as a credible partner to negotiation, Iran holds Death to America Day, commemorating the 1979 seizure of the U.S. Embassy. During that day, they feature burning of the American flag. But on top of that, in my mind, we need to understand the fundamentals of Iran. Just like in the U.S., anybody wants to understand what motivates the U.S., what drives the U.S., you read the American Constitution, you study the Founding Fathers. Here in or there in Iran, we're talking a very radical Shiite Muslim ideology which guides the current regime of the Ayatollahs in Tehran. And they have some fundamental values which have guided them ever since they've taken over in 1979. By the way, it's apparent in their school system, in their mosques, and in their daily conduct at home and abroad. For instance, the deep belief that the infidel Christian and Hindu and Jew and Buddhist, etc., must submit.
Indeed, they must. Mr. Ambassador, we have to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to find out further what this threat from Iran represents, not just in the nuclear context, but more generally, in terms of terrorism, in terms of the jihadism that drives this regime, and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is the senior officer in the U.S. military and an advisor to the commander-in-chief. The current chairman, General Martin Dempsey, however, has turned the position into one of chief uniformed cheerleader for and enabler of President Obama's disastrous national security policies. For instance, he is sponsoring an essay contest for our troops to applaud the late ruler of Saudi Arabia, King Abdullah. Mr. Obama just went there to lament Abdullah's passing and dine with his successor, King Salman, who, like many Saudis, has supported jihadist terrorism. Like his boss, General Dempsey has gone to great lengths to discourage U.S. military personnel from understanding that we are at war with Islamic supremacism and its animating doctrine of Sharia. Will he welcome essays to that effect? This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back and visiting, I'm very pleased to say, for a full hour with one of the eminent Israeli thinkers and strategists on the Iranian and so many other threats. He is Ambassador Yoram Ettinger. He served in the past as a senior diplomat for his country in its delegations here in Washington, D.C., and is the consul general of Israel to the southwestern United States. He is currently the executive director of Second Thought, a U.S.-Israel initiative, and you can find his writings at theettingerreport.com. And, Mr. Ambassador, you were talking a bit about the Iranian nuclear program as part of this sort of larger purpose that they seek, namely to compel submission. That includes, unfortunately, doesn't it, also the possibility of actually engaging in the violent kind of jihad that would bring about that result by the destruction of enemies that stand in its way, notably your country and mine.
One of the fundamental values is highlighting by Tehran the conflict between what they call the residence of the believers and the residence of the disbelievers. And the disbelievers are doomed by the sword. They exercise it on a daily basis because when it comes to disbelievers, the Fatih, for instance, are even worse than the infidel because they are the apostate. And what we have seen in recent days in Yemen is not merely a local terror event or uprising in Yemen. What we have seen in Yemen in recent days is the result of Iranians' involvement militarily, monetarily, training-wise, weapons-wise, which has brought about or catapulted the Shiite minority to the helm in Yemen, which has been historically an invasion route, a launching pad of attacks against Saudi Arabia. A control of Yemen means a potential toppling of the House of Saud. It could mean control of the Bab el-Mandab Strait, which is very, very critical link between the Indian Ocean, the Red Sea, and the Mediterranean. It could mean destabilization of neighboring Oman, pro-American Oman, which controls, together with Iran, the Strait of Hormuz, which is the only outlet for oil tankers from the Persian Gulf to the Indian Ocean, and all that part of the orchestrated Iranian attempt to topple all pro-American regimes in the Gulf. What would that do to global economy, to global stability, to Islamic terrorism, to vital American interests, or to global sanity? That is going on while Iran is conventional. One can only imagine what would be the compounded effect when Iran becomes nuclear.
This is something that we are ignoring at our extreme peril. Totalitarians quite frequently explicitly state their designs, their purposes, their ambitions, their goals. And Western democracies ignore them, at, as I say, their extreme peril. In addition to what Iran is doing in its own right, it is working with proxies. Doing so, you've mentioned, in Yemen, but also more immediately in your neighborhood. Talk a bit about Hamas in what I think of as Gazastan, and Hezbollah, now operating not only in Lebanon, but in Syria, including in close proximity to Israeli territory on the Golan Heights.
Well, when it comes to Hamas, once again, it attests to the strategic sophistication of Tehran. They leverage Hamas, or they use Hamas, not only as a dagger against Israel, but they use it in order to destabilize the reality in Egypt. Hamas is basically a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the largest intra-Arab terror organization operating in the Middle East since the 1920s. Sadly, tragically, the Muslim Brotherhood has been embraced by the Obama administration, which has turned a cold shoulder towards pro-American, pro-Western General Sisi in Egypt. Iran supports Hamas to destabilize its rival, Egypt. Iran supports Hamas in order to transform the Sinai Peninsula, which, by the way, is three times as large as the whole of Israel. Iran wants to transform the Sinai Peninsula, which is very strategically situated, into the largest terrorist base in the entire Middle East. Similarly, they support Hezbollah, again, not because they love their love for Hezbollah. They support Hezbollah because Hezbollah means another stronghold for Iran on the Mediterranean, which threatens, again, vital Israeli, American, Western interests, increasing, entrenching their influence on Syria, and potentially from the Persian Gulf all the way to the Mediterranean.
And Mr. Ambassador, as you lay this out, it is clear that what we're talking about is an aggressive, comprehensive effort to lay siege, really, and try to create conditions under which this jihadist enterprise succeeds in forcing the submission of all who stand in its way, notably, of course, what the Iranians call the little Satan, Israel, and us, the great Satan. If you look at what happened recently on the Golan in terms of the strike that the Israeli forces, the IDF, launched against a convoy that turned out to have not only senior Hezbollah officials, but also senior Iranian officials apparently casing the area for the purposes of launching attacks on Israel, do you anticipate that this is likely to move into a much more dangerous new phase?
Well, there's no doubt that just as it happens in local neighborhoods, if you do not send a very determined message to a bully, the bully is not going to moderate his tactic. In fact, he's going to become more ruthless. And the tragedy is that while one observes the very frightening, the very threatening Iranian track record, at the same time, we witness a U.S. administration which approaches Iran as if it is a reformed criminal. It's very positive when one approaches diplomatically and positively a rogue regime which gives up violence. But when there is a rogue regime such as Iran, and we haven't mentioned Iran's intensified ties with North Korea, another rogue regime, when you tackle a rogue regime which only exacerbates its rogue tactics, you cannot approach that rogue regime through diplomatic engagement while hiding and lowering the profile of the military option. The military option is the proper option when it comes to a determined rogue regime. And by the way, we saw that only recently. The same Iran, which was fighting Iraq for 8 years, stopped the war, agreed to a ceasefire back in 1988, only because then President Reagan intensified bombings of Iranian targets. We saw Gaddafi of Libya giving away his nuclear infrastructure only because in 2003 American tanks appeared on the streets of Baghdad and basically annihilated, physically speaking, the rogue regime of Saddam Hussein. Iran at that time in 2003 was also scared, suspending its nuclear activities. However, after a few months, they realized that they were not encountering an American Doberman. They maybe encountered an American poodle who preferred diplomacy over military. This is not the way to enhance posture of deterrence. This is the only a way to undermine one's posture of deterrence, which plays into the hands of rogue regimes such as Iran.
Amen. Mr. Ambassador, we have to pause for just one last second. We will be back momentarily with more with Ambassador Yoram Edinger. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Something unusual occurred in the aftermath of President Obama's State of the Union address when Washington Post columnist Glenn Kessler cited research from the Center for Security Policy in his Fact Checker column to fault the truthfulness of the president's statements about his efforts to halt the threat from Iran's nuclear program. Kessler cited a chart prepared by the center showing that Iran's enrichment of uranium has surged since 2009 and that Iran can now make at least 8 nuclear weapons from its enriched uranium stockpile. It is unheard of for the mainstream media to cite conservatives on arms control issues. The Post's decision to cite the Center's research reflects both the high quality of our work as well as growing concerns about the president's Iran policy. You can read our report issued last November, Why Congress Must Repudiate the Nuclear Talks with Iran, on the SecureFreedom.org website. I'm Fred Fleitz.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, completing our hour-long conversation with Yoram Ettinger, a former Israeli ambassador to the United States, representing his country with the United States Congress, also a consul general for the southwestern United States, a man who now runs the Second Thoughts Initiative. And you can find out more about him and his writings at theettingerreport.com. Mr. Messer, you've very helpfully characterized a number of the component parts of the challenge that Israel and we are facing now in the Middle East. Let's just do a quick tour de raison, can we, on other parts that are very much in play, it would seem, at the moment. You alluded to the struggle with the Muslim Brotherhood that the Egyptians are having. It's been said, I think, even by senior Egyptian officials, that in the aftermath of the removal at popular demand of the Morsi regime, the Muslim Brotherhood government, that relations between Egypt and Israel have never been better. Is that correct? And if so, is that likely to endure, do you think?
Well, there's no doubt the current security, homeland especially, and also national security between Egypt and Israel, and by the way, Jordan and Israel, Saudi Arabia, and other Gulf states and Israel. Those cooperation, forms of cooperation are at an all-time high, resulting from the intensified threat to each of such a regime, but also, sadly, from the lowered American profile in the Middle East. As far as Egypt is concerned, they and Israel are facing a mutual threat, which is Iran, which is Islamic terrorism in general, which is Hamas terrorism. And as a result, we have seen forms of cooperation which we never experienced before. How durable are those relations? I start to look at the Middle East and realize that the only durable element in the Middle East is the element of unpredictability. But we certainly have to leverage such reality as long as it is here with us. When we talk about Egypt and Israel relations, it comes at a time when the U.S. administration is embracing their opposition, the brotherhood that has driven the General Sisi closer to Russia. Hopefully, as time goes by, the U.S. administration will realize the proper tactic in our area. Likewise, between Israel and Jordan, today we have 1 million refugees from Syria. To a large extent, Israel helps Jordan to take care of those refugees.
Let me ask you about a couple of other countries that have had over the years varying relations with Israel, some of them quite different than those of today. Saudi Arabia, you've mentioned, longtime Wahhabi jihadist enterprise under successive kings, has had as its objective removing Israel from the Middle East. But at the moment, it certainly seems at least as though there is a mutuality of interests as both of your countries focus on the threat from Iran. Is this, again, the kind of sea change that might actually portend a more secure Middle East if we are able to take advantage of the moment?
Well, the Saudi-Israeli relations have gone through a very interesting path. Today, there's no doubt, they consider Israel to be their most effective life insurance policy in the Middle East. However, back in 1967, we had even a stronger testimony to the role played by Israel in securing such pro-American regimes in the Persian Gulf. Because in 67, Israel devastated the military power of Egypt, which was involved in the 60s in Yemen in an attempt to topple the House of Saud. The Israeli victory over Egypt basically snatched the Caliph from the hands of the Egyptians. When in 1981, we destroyed the Iraqi nuclear reactor, in a very subtle manner, the Saudis celebrated the Israeli operation, which, by the way, was condemned by the American administration. But in between those elements, sadly, the Saudis have pursued a very radical Sunni Muslim ideology, which does not tolerate so-called infidel, and certainly not infidel, which have a stronghold in the Middle East, namely the Jewish state.
Yeah. Joran, let me turn to another country that has been very difficult of late with respect to Israel, and I think for that matter with respect to the United States and our mutual vital interests, and that is Turkey. Discuss what's happening in Turkey at the moment and how that's perhaps a very, very ominous development, again, for both of our countries.
Well, Turkey, as we know, used to be a major axis, probably the major axis in NATO, as far as American interests are concerned, as far as regional reality is concerned. However, since the rise of Erdogan to power in Turkey, there's been 180, basically, a sea change in the role of Turkey from the most constructive to a most destructive as far as American interests, European interests, Israeli interests are concerned. However, interestingly enough, as far as trade balance, for instance, between Israel and Turkey, we are talking about persistence expansion of trade relations between the two countries, and one of the beneficiaries has been the son of Erdogan, who owns a shipping company, and his ships dock on a daily basis in Israeli ports. And once again, the power of the needs of Turkey, the power of maybe the people of Turkey, sometimes overpowers, dominates a very disturbing Islamic agenda of the person at the top of the helm.
This is a particular concern because, of course, as you've sort of suggested there, the President of the United States has aligned himself very closely with this Islamist Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey and, again, hostile to Benjamin Netanyahu. On that point, very quickly, Mr. Ambassador, what do you make of the fact that the president says he will not meet with Benjamin Netanyahu when he's coming to Washington, lest he interfere with the election taking place in Israel, and yet he apparently has quite a number of political operatives associated with him and his own campaigns now working against Bibi in that same election?
Well, personally, if I were to advise Prime Minister Netanyahu or any global leader, I would advise to avoid a preconditioning visit to Washington upon the willingness of the executive branch to hold a meeting. It seems to me that any foreign leader should be aware that, with all due respect to the executive branch, it is one of three branches which are co-equal and co-determining, and it seems to me that there is no more authentic representative of the American people than is the House of Representatives and the American Senate. And for a foreign leader to come to Washington, be hosted by the U.S. Congress, which represents the American people, is a very, very high honor. And if the president has no time, well, the prime minister should spend much more time at the co-equal branch, namely Congress.
You know it well, and it's good advice as always, as is all of the extraordinarily important analysis that you've just provided us. Mr. Ambassador, we're very grateful for your time, for the work you do at the Second Thought Initiative and the EttingerReport.com. Come back to us again very soon, if you would, Sue. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.